You know, it's been too long since I've done a good Packers reference. So I just, instead of trying to do something new, something I had to make up, I already just know about the Packers. So we'll just jump into it, right? The Green Bay Packers are the proud owners of a record, which means no one is better than they are, 13 professional football championships, including 4 Super Bowls, going to be a 5th this February. Just watch. But can I tell you, it wasn't always easy. The Packers have been around since 1919 and have played their entire existence in the Green Bay area. They've had a few home games in Milwaukee to see how the team would do in the Milwaukee area, but their home has always been established in the city of Green Bay, Wisconsin. While 1919 football was used to seeing a lot of teams in smaller markets, today's professional sports, it's kind of uncommon. It's not really used. There's a reason in many sports cities like New York and LA host not just one, but 2 or sometimes even 3 professional teams in the same league. States like California boast 4 or sometimes even 5 teams in different pro leagues, where states like Montana, Virginia, New Mexico, Mississippi have 0, have nothing. Yet in today's professional sports circuit, Green Bay is by far the smallest market to host a professional sports team, with an entire metro of about 300,000 people. The second smallest is Raleigh, North Carolina, at 1.4 million. So that's a massive gap there. This doesn't come without its hurdles. Large markets make sense. More people to buy tickets, more city pride. You know, more people, the more pride you have for the city. More fanfare, more taxpayer money to market and develop the team. More taxpayers to fund the stadiums and upgrade the stadiums. More areas to establish businesses to assist the demand of tourism. More local hotels and restaurants to host the tourists and to house and feed the traveling patrons. Most smaller cities that host pro sports teams are within a 10, maybe 15-mile radius of a much larger city, yet the Green Bay Packers are 2.5 hours away from Milwaukee. The Washington Redskins play and practice in a small town in Maryland, yet they're 12 miles right from the D.C. metro. Green Bay, 100 years later, continues to survive in a competitive sports world, but it hasn't come with its share of sacrifices. The city has needed funding, help from investors, and the state of Wisconsin actually a few times, even causing state legislature to get involved, twice almost moving the team to Milwaukee, and once almost requiring the team to move out of the state. Yet, fans stayed loyal, the team persisted, and through a lot of hard work, sacrifice, picking up the pieces along the way, the Packers remained rightfully in Green Bay, where they are to this day. There's actually been articles written. It doesn't quite make sense how a small market like Green Bay could sustain a professional sports franchise, yet they do it year after year after year. And not only that, but they're still profitable. They aren't taking a loss. How is this the case? Because of that hard work. Because of that sacrifice. Because of those fans that were willing to make their voice heard that they didn't want their beloved franchise to move to Milwaukee of all places. I mean, who would? It's Milwaukee. I don't know if anyone in here is from Milwaukee. If you are, I'm sorry. But it was that hard work, that sacrifice, that kept them there in Green Bay. So we look at the book of Proverbs. Now, understanding, I read one verse tonight. Just one. We went one verse in our text. And with most texts in the Bible, it's very easy to say, well, we can look at the whole chapter as a whole and understand the context of the verse. That's a little harder with Proverbs. Because Proverbs literally jumps from thought to thought sometimes. I mean, the verse before, in the mouth of the foolish is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise, it's talking about the difference between having pride and being humility. And then in ours, it talks about where no oxen are, the crib is clean, but much increases by the strength of the ox. And then the next one's talking about lying. A faithful witness will not lie, but a false witness will utter lies. There seems to be no continuity. But can I tell you, I still think it's within our best interest to look at the book of Proverbs as a whole and why Solomon, even seemingly jumping from point to point, would be instructing his son. We see that the book of Proverbs is split up. Typically, most scholars would split it up into 5 sections. Proverbs 1 through 9 is Proverbs of Solomon pertaining to wisdom. Just adhering his son, the attributes and the benefits of wisdom. Proverbs 10, verse 22, the largest chunk, and also where we find our verse tonight, are Proverbs of Solomon pertaining to moral virtues and their contrary devices. Proverbs 23 through 29, wise sayings of Solomon. Proverbs 30, Proverbs of Agur. And Proverbs 31, Proverbs of King Lemuel, including the traits of the virtuous woman. So we find ourselves here, seeing a Solomon that is pleading to his son to live morally, to live right, to live in wisdom, and also warning against those which would be contrary to it. We can look at this whole section and understand that his father cares about his son's future. I mean, why else waste so much writings, so much of inspired scripture writing to your son, begging him to listen to reason, to listen to wisdom, if he didn't care about his son's future? Now, I understand there's application in there for us today, but I believe that God used this for Solomon, pleading to his son to do that which was right. So we have our verse. Pleading to his son. Get this, Rehoboam. Where no oxen are, the crib is clean. But much increase is by the strength of the ox. All right? Guess we're talking about ox. What's important about ox? Why are ox mentioned in this verse? Well, ox are unique. They're bovine animals, similar to cattle, yet have some small differential qualities. Early farmers in the Byzantine Peninsula, and even as far as northern Africa and eastern Asia, have been using oxen in their fields for as long as history records it, with many of these nations still using oxen now for their farming purposes. Ox are big, burly animals. A single ox can pull about 5 to 5,500 pounds by themselves. Two yoked oxen together can pull around 12 to 13,000 pounds. This strength in the farming community really has no equal. It is said through many studies that plowing a 50-acre field with oxen would take a third of the time of a horse team, would take a fourth the time of a mule or a donkey team, and 1/13th the time it would take to plow the field by hand yourself. There is no argument the usefulness of these fine animals. One would legitimately be a fool to say, meh, oxen aren't that great. I'll do it by myself. And the verse says it at the end of our text, increase, but much increase is by the strength of the ox. There's value there. It helps with the plowing, with their strength, with their ability to move objects. Maybe if you're constructing something, they can move the wood, they can move the rock, they can move the tools that are necessary. It makes sense to say oxen have value. There is value there. But you know what else ox do? They poop. And it stinks. You know what else oxen are? They're big and they're stinky. Man, have you ever gone to a cattle farm and went, oh yeah, that's the stuff? No, most of the time you drive by and you're like, roll up the windows, kids. Come on, don't let that air get in here. Make sure the in-air cycle button on the car is pressed. Oxen, man, oxen stink. You know they have to eat too. My word, could you believe it? They have to eat. They have to sustain life. You have to buy food or cultivate land that they can eat from. It's ridiculous. You know, it also takes work to train them, to get them trained, to be yoked with another ox and actually work as a team. As I said before, the stat is they can do 5 to 5,500 pounds by themselves, and that would equate to 1,100 pounds, but together they can do 12 to 13,000. 10 to 11,000, 12 to 13. So they can pull twice, more than twice, what a single ox could do by themselves. They're working as a team. It takes time to train them. It actually involves work. It can be a painful work. I mean, how many of y'all work with animals? Is it enjoyable all the time? Oh man, training them, picking up after them, having to go buy feed for them. And man, when they get ornery, you know animals have a personality sometimes. Man, you know they'll kick you for no good reason. Man, you know they'll pull against. Maybe the ox is in a bad mood one day, and man, he's just pulling away. He doesn't really want to work. He wants to just go back and sleep in the barn. Oxen are work. Our verse describes it this way. Where no oxen are, the crib is clean. You know that place that you designed to store the ox? If there were no ox there, it'd be in pristine shape, wouldn't it? Oh man, that bed of hay you laid down would still be untouched. Man, that beautiful bag of feed you got is still full. No wasted money there. Man, I'm telling you, at that place, it doesn't have any bugs. It doesn't have any feces laying on the ground. It doesn't have anything. It is still in pristine shape. But much increase is by the strength of the ox. So what's, very plainly, what is our text telling us? Our text is telling us that oxen are worth our work, but they're worth it. Oxen require work. If they weren't there, the crib would be clean. You wouldn't have to worry about cleaning it. You wouldn't have to worry about picking up after them. You wouldn't have to worry about feeding them. But guess what? Man, you get a lot of value out of those ox, don't you? And that's Solomon's metaphor here to his son as he's pleading him to do that thing which is right. As he's pleading with him, he's saying, Solomon, if there are no ox, yeah, you got a clean crib. But think about all you gain from that ox. The farmer understands, and Solomon understands, trying to teach his son that the value of the ox is worth putting up with the work. Can I tell you in this text that God expects us to understand that things of value are worth putting in the work? God expects us to understand that things that are valuable, things that have value, are worth putting in that work. We go back to that illustration about the Packers. They made it. They're successful now. They're actually called the sixth most valuable franchise in NFL history. Or I'm sorry, in professional sports. They call it the Big Four. That'd be hockey, baseball, football, and basketball. They're the sixth most valuable franchise at $3.8 billion. And they're number three in merchandising after the Los Angeles Lakers and the New York Yankees. They've made it. They've been successful. But we're going on 100 seasons in professional football now, and there were paved roads of men who sacrificed their money, who sacrificed their time, who sacrificed their energy to ensure that that team would be successful. And can I tell you, it doesn't just end there. It's every sports franchise. It's every athlete. It doesn't stop there. It's every corporate successful business in the United States of America. But can I tell you, it doesn't stop there. It's your family. It's your home. It's successful marriages built around this country. They're paved by the roads of people who are willing to put in the work, knowing the value that's going to come out of it. And we can see here a Solomon that's telling his son Rehoboam, it's not always going to be simple. It's going to require work. It's going to require time. It's going to require standing behind the ox, picking up stuff you'd rather not pick up. But can I tell you, there is value in it. There is desire there. There is something that is to be obtained. There is something that has worth. There is something that will add to your reward if you simply are willing to put in the work necessary to do it. Can I tell you that this verse is actually meant to be an encouragement? A lot of Proverbs chapter 14, if you read through it, are actual proverbs that have to do with understanding if you follow the path of the virtuous, if you follow the path of the righteous, if you follow the path of the wise, that there's a reward there. There's a benefit there. This verse explains it in value, in increase, but much increase. There's something to be gained. There's a goal there to be achieved. It's meant to be encouraging. And yes, just like that farmer who is face first in digging out the excrement, the ox, and his hatred for it, he may even be discouraged and in a moment think, I'd be better if I never had this dumb ox. He is working towards something of value. And believer, the same can be said of you. Moms, raising children. Man, although we may not like to admit it, and I know my mom said it because I think I heard her a couple times, and it'd be better if I didn't even have these kids. And I know that's really not our thought, and we wouldn't give up anything for our children, or we'd give up everything for our children. But man, I'm not a mom, but moms, you've been there, right? Man, these kids are just, they're disobedient today. They're driving me absolutely crazy. And what this verse is encouraging you to do is continue putting the work in. There's value to be achieved. And frankly, sadly, we live in a society today that's given up on our kids. They're too disobedient. I'm not going to deal with them. I'm not going to discipline them. I'm just going to give them the candy, the video games, whatever they want, just so that they shut up. And can I tell you, they don't get the value that you will. They don't get the value out of their children that you will. And yeah, it's going to be hard. There's going to be times where you're disciplining that child. And the saying is true that it hurts you more than it hurts them, because you don't want to see your child hurt. You don't want to see your child in pain. You don't want to see your child not understand why they can't have that thing that they want. But can I tell you that in doing that right thing, that putting in that work, you're gaining something of value later. I think in some areas we understand it. I mean, think about your job. How many of you, man, if you didn't get paid, you'd be at your job 7 o'clock tomorrow morning? Yeah, exactly. But why do you go? For the reason I just said. You're getting your money out of it. You're willing to put in the work. You sat down, and whether you actually had a conversation with your employer and said, okay, I'm willing to do the work that you expect me to do, but I expect to be paid these wages, get these benefits, whatever the deal is. But you knew when you signed on to that job that you were expecting wages for your work. And I tell you that a lot of that is found here in this verse. I understand that a lot of people, you may find joy in your jobs, but I think for a lot of people that it's simply you're putting in the work, you're putting in the sacrifice, you're putting in that time that frankly you'd rather be doing something else, but there's value there and you know that. It's a way to provide for your family. It's a way to provide for your hobbies. It's a way to give to God so that you can be an active part of missions. It's a way for you to be involved and engaged, and you see value there. Can I tell you what else this verse applies for? Is marriages. It applies to your marriage, absolutely. That there are going to be times where, man, you just rather do what you want to do, but instead you choose to invest in and sacrifice in your spouse. To make the marriage stronger, to receive that value, it's going to take a sacrifice. It's going to take an investment. It's going to take work. And again, people, we're surrounded by a culture where marriage has been devalued so much that it would be easier to just say, well, we'll just get a divorce because I really don't want to sacrifice anything for you. I'd rather just live for myself and really do what I want to do. And we live in a world that they don't care about this. The simple principle out of the book of Proverbs, they're willing to look at the clean crib and say, yeah, that's what I want. I don't want the thing that requires work. I don't want the thing that's going to give me better value at the end. And they aren't willing to work hard at their marriage. They aren't willing to put in that. Now, can I tell you, when I got married, I mean, we're talking 5 months now, so like I think we're still in the honeymoon stage. But when I got married, I was under this delusion of, I'm always going to do what she wants to do. She's perfect. She's my angel. I don't get why marriages have problems. She's perfect. And I still think that, obviously. But I went into it legitimately thinking, yeah, if she wants to do something, we're going to do it. And then you fast forward 2 months, Father's Day this year. You know, we had our big Sunday morning. We had a barbecue outside. I was standing up. It was like 1,000 degrees. There was the sun on our faces. My feet were killing me. My old dress shoes had a big hole in the right sole. And so like little pieces of gravel in that parking lot were like chipping at my foot all day. And I was just like so excited because we had an afternoon service. And then after the afternoon service, I could just go home, watch sports, and fall asleep in my chair like any American man on Father's Day. Okay, cool. I expected some more excitement there, but that's all right. We can do it. And so, man, I'm picking up all the cones because we had coned off that parking lot, and I'm picking up all these cones, and sweet Jamie comes up to me. Hey, can we go to Shawnee Mission tonight for church? oh, no, please, Lord. So I think I said something snarky like, sure you can go. Absolutely, babe. Sure. No, can we go? I want to go to church there. And I haven't seen, you know, she probably hadn't been back since we'd been married. And that was her church family. And man, there was, can I tell you honestly, there was zero desire in my heart to drive to Kansas City and go to church that night. There was zero desire. And I think at one point I even said no. Man, as I'm putting those stinking cones away, the Lord convicted my heart. Said, hey, this isn't about you. This isn't about what you want. This is about her. All right. And can I tell you that I think most of us would attest in here that there's been times like that where we were, thankfully, we made the right decision. I feel like I made the right decision. I said, you know what? Let's go to Shawnee Mission. And you know, it was Father's Day. She wanted to see her dad. How much of a jerk would I have been to not do that, right? I didn't even realize that till we were like halfway down there. I'm like, oh, what if I had said no? She wouldn't have seen her dad on Father's Day. I'm a monster. But man, how many times, and sadly in our 5 months, I can attest to this, how many times where we should have made the right decision to invest and we didn't? where it wasn't even a hard decision. It was just, man, just our spouse, even in just an innocent, pure way, asking for us to invest. And we said, no, I'd rather do what I want to do. Can I tell you, that's looking at the clean crib and not seeing the value of the ox. Can I tell you that healthy marriages are built on investment and sacrifice? And don't just take that from me. That's a dude that's been married 5 months. I have no authority when it comes to that. But can I tell you that our pastors preach that? People in this room who have been married more than 40, 50 years will tell you that. That there are times that the strength of their marriage today can be attested because it wasn't two people who were on the same path every decision they ever made through life, but because when there were those times, there was investment and sacrifice from both sides. And their marriage is stronger because of it. Can I tell you where else this verse applies is in church ministries? And even just getting a chance to talk to Jamie about this today, and she was mentioning that she had heard this passage preached on, and it had to do with children's ministry in the church. Well, I think the children's ministry and oxen are a very good sync there, right? Well, I honestly think about it. You know, the Lord has blessed us with a phenomenal building. But do you know how many times I go in to clean the fellowship hall and I think something exploded in there? Like there is just, I walk into the kindergarten classroom. My goodness, if you guys haven't been in there, it's a war zone. And I walk in and like the crayon bucket's hanging from the ceiling fan spinning. There's crayons all across the room, candy wrappers stuffed in every single corner. And I'm like, my word, but wouldn't it be foolish to say, you know what, that's it. No more children's ministries. It's not worth it. I have to clean up all this mess. No, we understand why we have children's ministries, right? Because any mess that they can do with crayons and candy wrappers is worth investing in and getting them to tell them about Jesus. That's why we do VBS the way we do. That's why we throw in so many hours, so many man hours, so much sacrifice, so much time. Because the investment is worth the work. Can I tell you where else this verse applies is your walk with God. It'd be so easy to say, you know what, it's hard to have that relationship with the Lord that I should. I have much more fun just sitting and watching TV. So you know what, I'm just going to enjoy the clean crib. And we don't take that time to pray that we should. We don't take that time to read our Bible like we should. We don't jump into that willing to put in the work. Can I tell you, a right relationship with God takes work. Man, we see that all throughout Scripture. We're having the right heart to God, having the right relationship with God, it takes work. It takes putting aside things of your own self and understanding that He is in control and willing to make those sacrifices to jump in and understand that there's value on the other end of that. Even if that's understanding that value you may not receive here on this earth. That you are laying up treasures in heaven, treasures we couldn't possibly fathom. I got to explain it to my Sunday school class on Sunday morning, and I hope they'll forgive me for reusing this illustration, but imagine if I had a toddler up here, a three-year-old, and I had a shiny red tricycle right here, and over here, I had a trust fund bond for college in their future. And I said, all right, little three-year-old, which one do you want to take? Now here, this college fund, why are you on the tricycle? No, look over here. Look, this is a trust fund for college. No, stop honking the horn. Yes, I hear. No, look, come look at it. He's already on the tricycle. He's halfway down the road. He doesn't understand the value in this, nor does he even want to. All he sees is shiny red tricycle. My life is complete. Nothing could ever, until 30 minutes later, it's on the floor. And he's like, can we watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? And you're like, oh my word. Anyway, so can I tell you, believer, that this is where we're at? We see the treasures this world has to offer, and can I tell you, they look like a shiny red tricycle. They look good. Man, I want that. That would complete me. That would bring me joy. And then we look over here at this treasures laid up in heaven, and we have some biblical understanding as to what that is, but man, we don't even understand the rewards that we're going to receive or how they'll bring us joy and peace and actual fulfillment. And it looks to a three-year-old like this heaping college trust fund, whatever that is. And to us, we're looking at these treasures in heaven as if, why would I want that when I can have this? Can I tell you that the investments you make in this world do have a value? And it's a value you may not see right now. It's a value that you may not see until you pass into glory. And you get to see our Father. Man, that's worth more than any shiny red tricycle. To get to see Him face to face, just that alone. Can I tell you, believer, I think most of us would understand the simplistic aspect of this verse, but there are so many ways we can apply it to relationships. In the life of a believer, we interact with many different people. Really many different people we have nothing in common with other than Jesus. I mean, just even by age differential, you know, Brother McCurry and I probably wouldn't be chilling on a Friday night in my apartment. Oh, we still don't. We need to change that. But we probably wouldn't just be chilling. You know, we wouldn't be in the same building on a random Wednesday night if it wasn't for our mutual love of the Lord. Can I tell you that there are some people in here that I may have a friendship with if it wasn't for the Lord, if we didn't have Christianity. But for the 99% of you, I would not know you from anyone else in existence. But we have this connection of the Lord. And can I tell you that in that, Satan wants to cause conflict. Because we do. We interact with people who think differently than we do, that have different interests than we do. And you know what? There are times where we're going to get in a point where it's like, man, this Christianity thing's hard. And if I have to deal with people like that, it's just not worth it. Brother Dan Preston preached the same text at Heartland, and I love what he summarized it in his own words. He said, putting up with the undesirables of life is necessary to have what is desired most. And what I love about that is we can take that word undesirables out and really plug in anything that applies to it. That undesirable man, having to pick up after kids in super church, man, having to put in that extra time to study for that Sunday school lesson, man, having to do this instead of what I want to do, man, having to choose to go to church on a Sunday night on a Father's Day when we don't even have a Father's Day service, but to get what's desired most, man, that kind of puts that choice into perspective, doesn't it? What would you rather have, a clean crib or the value of an ox? When you really weigh it out, ask any farmer here in the United States, they'll be quick to answer. They understand the simplicity. Would you rather have a crib that you don't have to clean or the animals that help you get your work done? Well, they'll choose the animals. Can I tell you, believers, too many times we're stuck looking at that like it's a hard choice. And too many times, sadly, we choose the clean crib. And we aren't worried about losing that value that God so simply promised us. Where no oxen are, the crib is clean, but much increase is by the strength of the ox. Let's close in a word.